Hi, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of Return of the Hack, the podcast from E92+. I'm your host, Neil Langreed. I'm the Marketing and Analysis Director at E92, and I'm delighted today to be joined by Carl Froggatt, who's the CISO at Deed Instant. Hi, Carl. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, Neil. Good morning. Good afternoon to you. Yeah, thanks for having me, eh?
No problem. No, thank you very much for joining us. So today we're going to be talking about the role of a CISO, which is definitely something that is more organisations are identifying the importance of having somebody looking after kind of cybersecurity at that senior level. But I think the role has definitely evolved hugely over the last few years, and definitely most importantly, I think, you know, the importance that it's assigned to within organisations. But if you just kind of start at the top, Carl, can you kind of give us a little bit of background about yourself and kind of what you've been doing?
Yeah, sure. I'm the CIO and CISO here at Deed Instant. I joined about 18 months ago. Prior to that, I worked at Citi or Citibank for 27 years, a long time, but I had many different roles, primarily in IT and cyber. So I would say 25 of those 27 years was cyber. So as I like to say, before it was cool. Before it had a budget, that's for sure, right? And certainly before, as we'll talk about, the role that it is today. And so, yeah, over that career there, I did everything from operations to security operations, deploying technologies, massive scale from a cyber perspective. So all the endpoint, network infrastructure, all the SIM installed, data lakes, the SOC used across Citi's estate, which is 150 plus countries, around 1 million endpoints roughly, and a couple of 100,000 network devices. So big set. Did it all end to end as well, Neil. So everything from innovation and startups to delivery to engineering to delivery and operations. So as I like to say, I actually know how this stuff works, not just what it says on the slides, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I think that kind of, kind of boots on the ground experience from having to deal with it is always key. I won't take you quite as far back of having to install antivirus on a floppy disk, but I'm sure you might have been there as well at some point.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've seen it all. I've seen the evolution, right, of cyber and apps. It's kind of crazy if you think about, all those years ago. So I started on trading for technologies, right? And then as business digitized, right, and the internet took off, and that was kind of the first wave of doing things like remote access for the first time, remote working. And then obviously the threats started to come, and so then cyber became more of a real career opportunity. So I kind of feel blessed to have wrote kind of the internet evolution and then the unfortunate threat evolution that followed that, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, but I think, as that was a kind of a natural consequence, is, kind of that explosion when we started getting that interconnectedness. Just networking, computers, everything connected, then over from local networks and wider networks, multiple locations. But where there's opportunity, sadly, kind of threat follows, I suppose.
For the bad actors, it's all about, ultimately, they're generally wanting to make a profit, right? So when you expose yourself like that, they follow that test. Obviously, you have some political or other motivations, but a lot of what we see today is generally some sort of extortion on profit. So unfortunately, that's just out of all the words.
But we kind of get on to that. The kind of obviously, kind of when we see that kind of evolution of kind of the importance of tech within a business, and kind of where the role of the CIO and the CISO has kind of got to now. I think there's obviously been a number of reasons why those two things have kind of gone in parallel, and I think, it's very difficult to have a conversation kind of nowadays when you're a little bit reflective without also appreciating the difference COVID made, because obviously that accelerated so much, especially around kind of remote working. But kind of what else has been those key drivers in really establishing the kind of things like cybersecurity in particular as being of more kind of strategic importance to businesses?
So, I mean, I think we touched on, through my career, I've kind of been through, first of all, I've been very fortunate to work with a number of different CISOs, some of who are recognized as industry leaders, right? So, yeah, the role continued to evolve. So, I think way back, right, not to be disrespectful, but the role of the CISO at the time was kind of writing policies and dealing with compliance, and you're right. So, looking back with hindsight, it was a necessary kind of tick box, right? And that's fundamentally because at the time, the business and the boardroom didn't really appreciate the importance of what a CISO does, right? That partly could be due to the fact that we didn't have that interconnectedness. Right. And the bad actors and the threat, like they were still kind of quite quiet. Right. But then as the roles changed, there was a very one of the CISO views that Citi is a technology company with a banking license. And that is the way to think about it, because I really struggle to think of any kind of modern, medium, large enterprise that doesn't use IT. That doesn't have apps, that doesn't have a web presence, that doesn't rely on third parties. Third parties, not just third parties like SaaS vendors, cloud providers, right? So I love to think of it that way. Most companies today, their foundation is technology, right? That supports whatever their business strategy is. And that's how the role of the CISO has changed from that kind of more policy, implementing policy. Then it kind of moved to more of an enforcement and compliance of policies. They started getting more teeth, right? And then as the evolution of technology, and I call it the digitization of the business, right? As that got more important, then to be fair, the CEO from the C-suite started to understand, hey, right, our customers, our presence is really important for our business strategy and our revenue and our profit. But we can't afford a reputational hit through bad coding, vulnerabilities, whatever, whatever. So then the prominence and the power of the CISO within an organization became a lot more influential. And then, of course, now we're into a different evolution, both from a technology perspective. You touched on it a minute ago. The complexity of the surface, right, the attack surface, used to be a data center with four walls. We had a few data centers and a few locations, but you were in control of everything pretty much. Not today, right? There's so much kind of, whilst you can do checks and balances, you're ultimately relying on a lot more interconnected third parties to be secure, right? So that whole attack surface is complicated. And you're trying to support the business because, as a CISO, you don't want to say much. As a CISO, you need to understand all the business wants, but I always try to find a way of you can't quite do it like this, but if we do it this way, you should be able to meet your objectives and it's a lot safer, right? That's kind of the balance I always try to find working.
Yeah, and I think there's an opportunity, I think, for organizations where not just technology, but even cyber can definitely be a business enabler. It's a you mentioned, there's the line about, everyone becoming a software company. It's where they can use that as a potential competitive advantage.
Yes.
Especially in certain fields, that's going to be even more the case than others.
No, absolutely. And with the different lines of business, obviously, at Citi, without getting into too much detail, we did exactly that, right? So we would, I was kind of on different calls at different times, notifying I'll call them a customer, right? That we believe that they have malware, for example, that we know it because we, it's kind of incoming to us, right? And it's unusual and we know it's bad. So we proactively reached out for it, for example. So security as a competitive advantage is key. I think the competitive advantage initially, though, is that your security is good enough so that you're not suffering a breach and a reputational loss. Because remember, and obviously it's different in different industries, but as consumers, we have so much choice these days, and it is so easy to move. Right. So that loyalty, that brand, I come from the UK. Right, so yeah, my parents kind of baked it the same way for like 40, 50, right? Without loyalty, it's so easy to move. So if they suffer a breach and you go, well, I don't like that, and I had a slightly poor experience with customer service last time, oh, boom, right? There's so many options. So yeah, critical importance for so many reasons.
And I think something you touched on as well to pick up in terms of working with kind of customers or suppliers. Kind of traditionally, IT was obviously very much an internal, or as you kind of mentioned, the top in operations function. Whereas now that role of a CISO, I suppose, is definitely spread far beyond just that organization itself. Because, again, to take cities as an example, it's the complexity of that supply chain with, as you say, kind of SaaS organizations and cloud and data center providers, but also parties that aren't necessarily providing tech services, but are just within the normal supply chain, whether it's kind of marketing operations, whether it's procurement, whether it could be literally to do with the functions of keeping the lights on, literally the lights on in a bank because they have smart systems and they're all interconnected and there are connections out. The importance of that supply chain, both up and down, means that a CISO doesn't can't just work within their own organization. That interconnectedness with other parties is essential.
Now, the role of the CISO today needs to be a foundational role across the whole C-suite, right? So this is where it became more influential, certainly in the last 10 years. And again, the maturity of different companies, as I'm kind of seeing my role here at Deep Instinct, varies greatly, right? So, but the way to imagine it is the CISO was the foundational layer, right? So, it was empowered to make strategic decisions on everything from supply chain to risks to whatever, right? That the other businesses doorboxed, right? So that's the empowerment of the CISO of first, you've got to work in that team of teams mentality in any modern organization today. Silos that you're going to make mistakes. Silos generate a lot of inefficiency, but certainly from a CISO perspective, not acceptable because if you've got a visibility, it's hard to measure. If you have a silo who's running off kind of, I don't know, doing their own thing, building their own identity, deploying their own kind of security software, maybe security operations is fragmented. So now for your business, you don't have a view. It's very hard to manage, and you're certainly increasing your TCO. But the more you increase complexity, the harder it gets, right? But that CISO kind of role, like I say, kind of went from a pillar off to the side of a policy compliance and became a foundational layer with the empowerment, to block this it took your authority away. So, or became a voting member, if you want to call it that, on architectures and technology and risk councils, so that they, because it needs to function to a degree of independence, right? I keep saying, you absolutely have to understand the business strategy and work with those different businesses. But you're there for the business strategy, right? You're not there to say no to everything. But the ability to stop, to take an objective view and say, that's too risky, right? And have that power to kind of it. But like I say, you don't just say no, right? You kind of go, hey, look, you explain. This is why it's so risky idea, right? Can we take a slightly different approach and we design one character?
And on that subject of risk, kind of one of the terms that kind of I think is becoming increasingly common and talked about when we're discussing cybersecurity strategies, that around kind of cyber resilience. And first of all, I suppose one resilience from a cyber and an IT perspective is fundamental, tied into an organization's business continuity plans and resilience. And it is a tech careful balance, I suppose, the CISO needs to take in terms of managing and enabling and saying yes to digital innovation, but also being cognizant of the fact of, if things go wrong, and we all know the stats, especially with small businesses, of in the event of a catastrophic cyber attack, of literally not being around 48 hours later. That balance between be kind of driving to a competitive advantage in innovation versus managing that risk element to make sure a business is resilient. That's you know, that's one of the biggest challenges I imagine nowadays.
Yeah, look, for your, kind of small to mid-sized, right, that, kind of companies who are probably using that a partner and MSP, right? That's probably the right thing for them to do. Yeah, we kind of touched on already, and I'm happy to talk for hours about the complexity and the challenges of deploying that, right? One of the reasons that I joined Deep Instinct with its new kind of approach to threat is it is a very low TCO, and it is using deep learning, which is very unique and new to the market. It enables, and we're working with MSPs, right? Because we're very accurate at, with low false positives, but we can predict and prevent threats that haven't been created yet, right? And that's just the power of our technology. And what that means for your MSPs and small to mid-sized kind of businesses to, let's be honest, Neil, right? That, finding good cybersecurity professionals is hard, right? Paying them is even harder. And really, if I think of small and mid, they're generally, their business is not cybersecurity, right? Their business is restaurants or points of sale or gas stations or whatever, right? So cybersecurity is a fundamental thing for every company these days, but it's not their core competency. Right. So using a partner and then combining it something like with our technology, which, like I say, is very accurate and predicts and prevents future threats that haven't been created yet, means more of a, I'll call it fire and forget. I don't think you should ever just forget about cyber. But yeah, if I look at the, I've deployed everything Neil over my career. Right. So, we went through lots of phases of collecting a lot of data, right? Either IDS, IPS, EDR, right? The notion was, let's get all the data and telemetry we can, and we can use analytics and whatever. The thing with that is, it doesn't stop anything, and it's slow. And the threat landscape is fast, right? So, to think of the Okta breach, I think that was from start to finish, 18 minutes, right? If you think of something, no, I'll kind of think of some old ones like Target, the Target one, which was a few years ago now. Funnily enough, their software was, the lights were going off, right? Like, hey, something weird's happening, and nobody was looking at the console, right? So the combination of too much data, too slow, detect and respond, right? And then, even if you have all the ton of cool stuff, people are not looking at the light, right? You need something like Deep Instinct and Outhead. That's where we need to go because as the threat landscape is just evolving too quickly, right? So you build that resilience in that way. Obviously, for different enterprises at the top, they generally have their dedicated slots, big C-cell organizations, right? But even then, we used to work with, third parties, right? Partners. And then we also have things like FSISAC and government kind of sponsors where you would share threat intel data and find that because you find that in it together, right? And that's what I loved about working in the financial industry is there was a lot of nobody was left behind, right? It was like we're all in this together common enemy, right? So that doesn't, I don't believe, exist too well, certainly in the small and mid-market, right? So they're missing that whole thing and just relying on somebody else.
I mean, being kind of isolated, that is a challenge. I think that also kind of ties in with something I think many IT, many kind of IT teams or IT individuals within small and medium-sized businesses kind of have the challenge is around the skills gap as well. So being, have you seen a real trend in terms of even in larger organizations of it recognizing the importance of working with third parties, trusted partners, managed service providers, because no organization is an island, and being able to pull in those that expertise externally from somewhere else has become more important as the as the complexity of the threat and the challenge has increased, has there been that kind of rise in recognition of you can't do everything yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, every organization's a little different, so I'm trying to not be on what what I experienced, right? We generally did a lot ourselves. But I can think of many examples. Yeah, I'll give you an example, right? Of, you know, when you're making a big decision at a very global bank, heavily regulated bank, right? And you're, I don't know, you're making a new decision on where to go next with your defense in depth strategy, for example. It helps to get a third party's opinion, right? The little thing there, right? It helps to get a third party's opinion because, you know, you as the leader, right? I didn't want to get into it, right? Everybody gets excited about something and then everything else is kind of put to the side. So having that third party kind of review of the problem and the whatever, and hopefully can do a consensus, to even in the largest organizations is key. Not just a threat intel share. And then we also use third parties to help us test, right? Which again is something I'm finding in my role here at Deep Instinct, and having the opportunity to meet so many different customers and prospective customers. You don't have time to do. Not only that at the time, don't have the expertise, right? So they really do need to rely on a third party because, as we were talking just before, the stack is complicated. The interactions between the different technologies that you need for a good cyber approach is complex, right? And again, that's something we're working with MSPs around the world, and they're trying to see in our more simplified approach, not only on the endpoint, but we also integrate into a defense and depth stack using API like that. We also integrate the backend storage with Dell and NetApp. So it's a much simpler architecture than some of the things that have been built over the last 10 years, which I've deployed, right? Yeah. It's just how technology works, right? 15 years, machine learning kind of approaches have been around. That's pretty old in tech terms, right? None of us own a phone that's 15 years old, right? So it's just natural evolution, just the same way that the threat landscape continues to evolve, right?
When we look at the challenges, especially kind of in small and medium-sized businesses that might not have, you know, that the level of expertise and the scale of the teams, something that we've already kind of touched on AI and automation and that technology, is you kind of always hope that that's the case a little bit, but is that going to be a way of democratizing a little bit that kind of the ability for all organizations to be able to use technology as a competitive advantage, to be able to kind of overcome not always having the investment or the skills in-house, of them being able to automate a lot of that and potentially so they can respond quickly to threats, that they don't always have people, you know, on alert looking at a dashboard, so as you say, when all the lights start flashing. Is that the kind of promise of AI that kind of now, you said, as you say, machine learning's been around for a while, but, you know, kind of as we've seen the consumer space, ChatGPT has suddenly exploded and, you know, my daughter uses it for her homework. So is that kind of, you know, becoming AI for the masses, is that going to start seeing a real big difference to the security teams as well?
I think you just sold your daughter out, but I'm the operations guy. I've met a lot of companies all over the world. They think that, so you're not about like using an AI to prevent something, right? To block a threat. Now we do that, right? But with the malware and the ransomware, like I say, the zero day in the unknown, right? And we're very good at that. That's what we do, and we're the only ones who can do it, right? So you just a quick, really, what do I mean by that? I've got many examples that Mango was one. We released what we call our brain in November of 2022. I think it was 9 months later that Mango was first seen.
Yeah.
And we prevented it, and then it took the current kind of landscape vendors, I can't remember if it was 2 days or 3 weeks. So after they had seen it, to come to the conclusion that it was malicious, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, what I like to say is we protected our customers for, you know, kind of 11 months and, you know, 2-3 weeks, right? Yeah, they did it. They were mind scraping. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
That's the fundamental shift. This is what we need to go to. This is where the boardroom, for example, right, detect and respond is too slow. As you said, right, you're going to pivot away from, you know, your business isn't going to be there, right?
Yeah.
Unless you pay the ransomware and the extortion and whatever. But even then, remember, some of these groups are just destructive, right? They don't really care. But back to AI. So there's AI in actually preventing the threat and not having to worry about a response, right? So let me pivot back to the response. I deployed network admission control, 15 years ago, right? I still see companies today that don't have it. And when I talk to them in my new role, their challenge is they don't want to block a device and take a preventative action because they don't have an accurate inventory. They don't have a standard build to try and figure out what is a device that is good from a device that isn't, because they don't have the markers, right? So we've had this kind of blocking prevention capability since the dawn of time. It's really hard to think, right?
Yeah.
And I would kind of see small and medium sized businesses, you know, really struggling with that configuration drift, what I would call patchy. Basic IT hygiene is difficult. And if you don't have that, you can't use a preventative to block a device or to block something, right? Because that's what you're on about is, I think this is bad, so I'm going to prevent it from actually doing something bad, right?
Yes.
So organizations really struggle with that. AI in that scenario, really not going to help, I don't think, right? And again, it comes back to AI is great, but you still need the skill set to get the value out of it, right? Yeah. And again, so what I would generally see here from the audience that we're talking to today is more your partners, right? Your MSP and your partners are going to leverage AI so that they can maybe be more responsive. But it's going to be still challenging. You're still in a detect and respond unless you start taking a prevention first approach. And that's going to be painful initially because I would argue probably most people in this audience have never done that before, right? Because we've been about detect and respond as an industry for 15 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a big change. And also it's kind of... It requires a lot of upfront overhead and potentially it's disruptive. I think that's going to be a challenge for a lot of businesses. You know, you quite rightly said at the start, no CISOs want to be the department that just says no. And then I suppose that's the risk with a more preventative based approach. If you don't get it right, you're pre-praying no quite a lot at the start until you manage to kind of, you get things working where you can say yes. So I suppose it's that classic case of trying to avoid technology being a block to the business being effective.
Yeah, you have to look. I mean, we could do another one of these, right? There's definitely approaches of what you can take to get to a more preventative posture, right?
Yeah.
What a big bang approach. But it does, and again, we're kind of back to the role of the CISO. It requires buy-in at the highest level, the CEO, generally the CEO and the board, if a company has a board. Why? Because first of all, you said, right, you are going to make mistakes, right? You are going to get it. You are going to find that you are going to do something that accidentally disrupts the business. You can plan for those disruptions though, right? How you roll out a preventative approach is one of the keys to its success. It's not impossible, but yes, it's a mindset change, number one. And the mindset change is not a technology one, although that becomes secondary. The first mindset change that is happening now is we can't live with detect and respond. We know we have stuff over here that we're not managing correctly, that we don't have visibility of. We don't know what assets we have. We don't even have an inventory of what SaaS and cloud and whatever, you know. We don't have an inventory of our virtualized environment. These are basics. Right. But we talked about it today, and to be honest, yeah, there's maybe an opportunity for harmonizing some of that from from another startup, right? Because it is challenging.
Yeah.
But that's why the CISO leads the buy-in. But the buy-in is risk. If we don't start doing this, we will get hit. We
Yeah.
will have ransomware or data loss or whatever. And obviously, even for the most unregulated private company, right? You're going to lose customers and maybe cease to exist, right? Because, like I said, it's very easy. People will just choose to go elsewhere. And
Yeah.
that becomes the role of the CISO, driving the risks. IT, the CIO kind of getting on board and going, right, we need to, from an IT, we need to kind of be more in tune, right? And doing this stuff better so that we can have a prevention first approach, right? And then obviously from the business side of controlling to a degree, and like I say, not trying to say no, but hey, we already have an identity solution. Please don't go and build another one, right? We already
Yeah.
have FA lake or whatever. Please don't go and build another, right? Reduce the complexity. But to be honest, that's good TCO as well, right? Yeah, kind of
Yeah.
trying to reuse things.
Yeah. And so, having that confidence of putting the right technology in place to be able to move to that preventative based approach is going to be key. But one of the other things I kind of wanted to touch on, you talked about that kind of getting a board level approval and everybody's tie in to have that mentality shift to like, well, no, we can do this. It can be prevention first. We don't want to have to deal with the consequences of attack. Kind of, what are those challenges in building the right cybersecurity culture within an organization? Because that culture applies to both the board's approach to cybersecurity, but then filters down all the way to making sure that people on the front desk aren't clicking on a link, to that an email comes in and the phishing one that's got the way through. So building the right cybersecurity culture that I kind of just my view, you want one that's kind of hopefully as open and transparent as possible, and people don't fear making a mistake. What are the challenges in doing that? Because it's especially on a large organization, it's that must be quite that's quite a challenge.
Yeah, so look, I think at a board level, it's about they're generally very smart people, right? With usually within the industry, so they finally get it,
Yeah.
right? But you got to get educated, and you got to continuously educate them about a change of the threat landscape. And I think that's kind of where we're pivoting to, right? You mentioned ChatGPT and the rise of generative AI. So educating the board, for example, there was one in the news just last week. I think it was in Hong Kong, still under investigation, right?
Yeah,
But an
yes.
employee of a bank joined a Zoom call where everybody else was a deep fake
Yeah. Yeah, that was
and
quite a time.
initiated a transaction for $25 million, right? Because he or she thought they were talking to the CFO and it was all fake. That is not right. Obviously, it's still under investigation, but highlighting these kind of things to the board, right, and then doing one of my peak roles was constantly evaluating the threat landscape with what we had and how effective what we had. So obviously, I spent a lot of money on different things, different layers in the defense, but we were continuously going getting back to continuously testing. Not only did they work or not, right? Blue screen or whatever, right? Continually testing their effectiveness and the efficacy about stopping the threats. And you'll be amazed and surprised with a lot of the current kind of solutions at how poor they are, especially with new and unknown threats. You would hope that a threat has been around for 30 days. Everybody's kind of caught on to it and have updated and whatever. This is the detect and respond. By the way, I can say now that's not true, right? In my experience, I'm not saying any names, right? But it's not true. So when you get into more of the a threat that's been around less than 24 hours, right? You're in, there's a patient zero somewhere, somebody's already got hit, right? And you're hoping, right? Fingers crossed. That you're going to get, some update at some point, right? So you're not patient number one. And like I say, that can be days and weeks, right? And we have examples. So board level, they kind of get it. Board level, you certainly need to manage them. And you got to balance, again, it's the CISO, the risk, right? Even working at a bank takes risks every day, right? Yeah. It loans money every day. That's a risk, right? But it's just a certain type of risk. But then as you go down, the combination of risk, compliance, CIO, and the CISO, and then what I would call the business edge, right? The people making the business kind of strategies is absolutely key. Team of teams, right? So that culture that you talked about for me becomes, hey, if we don't all work together, they're going to win.
We're
going to be disrupted. None of us work here to upset our customers. None of us work here, right? None of us want to be on the front page. So one aspect of the culture is a survival one, right? We have to work together because like I said, every day you can go in the news, you can go into your vertical, if you're in finance, if you're in aerospace, if you're in power and utility, you can go and you can find one of your peer groups that has been there. Right. Yeah. So you kind of have that, you kind of start finding the, we're in this together, right? Blah, blah, blah. I think the challenge becomes, though, especially generative AI, and we kind of talk about a threat landscape evolving, where we already know the bad actors are using generative AI, right? We see that with the deepfake example that is mentioned. We see that with, I think there was a report there was a report about the bad actors using generative AI, not to attack, but to do surveillance, right? So if you think about how malware gets into a company, right? It's files, it's a vulnerability, whatever. So they're using generative AI to take massive amounts of data that they've got about what you hack, what patch level is it at, what software do you use, right? And then just pulling that either from beta breaches or from social media, LinkedIn, whatever, right? But you can gather a lot of stuff. Bad actors do this today, but it's people doing it. They're not using it, they're automating it. And so not only is it faster and cheaper, it's much more sophisticated. So they're doing the surveillance of you and your employees and your people and their roles and what software you use and what patch level you're at and whatever, right? And they're basically doing an attack simulation to find the weakest path, right? And then they're using the AI to do. People do this today, but they're starting to use the AI in that early stage of the attack chain. And phishing is crazy, right? Fraud GPT. Which exists and is on the dark web for sure, and on the dark web with the restrictions disabled, like you can't tell the difference. So the whole kind of security training that we all used to do of like, hey, do you see bad grammar and different fonts and it, right? It's really difficult now, even for somebody like myself who's been doing it for 30 years. So these are like, again, we could do another podcast, Neil, with the whole kind of how you start to build a culture, but they're kind of key things, right? Not just the training, as I call it, right? But building the culture, that team of teams, common enemy, we're in it together, right? Yeah. And then the big one for me is when somebody makes a mistake, you can't have a retaliation nature, right? Why? Because everybody else is going to go, look what happened to them when they reported something, when they accidentally did something, right? Something really bad happens. You can't have that. Obviously, it's probably some cases of sheer incompetence and whatever, but generally, you can't have that. Otherwise, you're just going to shut out. You need your employees, your soldiers here, right? You need them on side and whatever. So lots of elements of culture, training, and again, that threat landscape is I would argue right now we're on the back foot. The threat landscape has shifted, and we're kind of catching up right now.
Yeah, is that one of the kind of key sometimes a shift in mentality of making sure that viewing the workforce as you say, your frontline soldiers rather than being your biggest vulnerability, your kind of potential threat that's likely to be exploited, of they are a little bit of both, but I suppose having that mentality shift of making sure that they're there for it, you're viewing them from a positive perspective, that they can help play a fundamental role in that prevention first strategy.
Yeah, look, I work with fraud as well, and it's kind of interesting how the fraud and the kind of cyber teams, if you think about it, right? If you think about fraud, if I call it an agent, right? Somebody's managing transactions that thinks there's something suspicious here, right? They raise the flag and report, and you need the same, and everybody, they're literally your eyes and ears everywhere, right? Well, it's not. We talked about basic IT hygiene and what, right? There's a technology play for sure, but there's this other play, right? I think it's still relevant. The most common vectors of threats in your company are internet drive-by, email, and USB, right? And I know I participated in one a few years ago where, we kind of stood outside the office and gave USB keys away, right? Right, and that's human nature, right? And this was in the era when the average fee was probably like, I don't know, 1 gig, and we were like giving 16 gig away, right? We were, oh, right, and so there's a little bit of training still, that training awareness, that still obviously has a place, but it's got to shift, right? You like to say, proficient one's the obvious one for me, right? It is next to impossible to tell the difference there. Being the CISO here at Deepin, I had great fun in kind of crafting my anti-phishing and whatever, right? It's a lot of fun being on this side, but it's tough. And a lot of those attacks are coming through, some very simple vectors, right? Vulnerabilities into that USD and obviously phishing, right? So when see phishing is the other.
I think the difficulty is it's not just going to get stopped with a picture of your face on the wall saying "Don't accept a USB from this man." It's
It was
a
a
bit
fun
more,
one.
bit
Enjoyed that
more
one
time.
a few years ago.
Absolutely. And I think I did, one of the other things I just kind of wanted to absolutely kind of touch on before we finish up, just getting towards the end. Your talk, comment about working together. I think you kind of mentioned some industries are probably better than others. I can imagine, absolutely, banking. There's a strong community on CISOs, lots of shared intelligence because you're competitors, but we're all on the good guy side. And if even if we broaden that out to the cybersecurity and IT world in general, I definitely feel there's being able to work together, more shared intelligence, more kind of collaboration and integration, definitely feels like one of the weapons that we have to fight the bad guys that maybe we don't necessarily do as well as we could do.
I think you've got CISA here in the US, right? You've got I know the UK government, it's been doing so. It's definitely for, like I say, not the big enterprises because they generally they're ahead of the curve, right? Regulation, things like FSISAC, National Critical Infrastructure, which banks are, right? So they're ahead of the curve, but having something that's more general. I'm seeing the frameworks there. But again, I come back to this is probably, and again, with media and support, you're probably going to want a partner who's doing this on your behalf because again, I'll go back to the lights are flashing and nobody did anything. Like, so what's the point if your business is getting threat intel? What do you do with it? Do you have a SOC? Do you have a SOC that's 24/7? Right, because remember, the bad actors don't care, right? They're all over the world, right? So you can't, it's an expense, and it's a competency, it's not a core competency of a lot of businesses. The only way it partners, right? For me, you should be looking, and then the partners definitely, if they're selling cyber and security services. They need to be on top of their game and plug into these things and providing that value to customers, right? And trade intel is always required, right? What I do see, even across the and I've always seen this, to be fair. Saga kind of shares a lot. If I think of different vendors that I've worked with, pretty much all of them, that's flipping, but all the big ones for sure, and a lot of little ones, just my role was not just dealing with the big, it was working with City Ventures and in the startup community. They share a lot. We share a lot. We had a world-class threat research team. We bluff how can we share it? We go to the blackouts and the conferences and DEF CONs and all vendors do that. So there is that kind of community feel, which I love about cyber. But to your point, it's not something that most people, it's not a core competency. So it has to rely on a partner. Because again, getting all that threat intel, it's done absolutely nothing to reduce your risk until you take an action on it. And the longer you wait to take an action on it, the less valuable that action becomes, because, right, I mean, that's the challenge. And that's why, we're starting to see that shift to, a prevention first approach, which is not just last year at defense, Gartner and IDC are kind of set similar things, right? So the shift is already happening, and it's because the threat landscape has changed. Ransomware initially changed that, right? So if you think of Sony attack, which was, 10, 12 years ago now, that actor was in there for a year. And then they had a very, very infamous kind of attack. Right, Okta was 18 minutes, right? Ransomware used to be low and slow. Used to encrypt everything, right? Anybody in IT takes a lot of time. And it's very noisy, right? You can actually see ransomware because of the files it's accessing, right, going through the folder, CPU sites, right? So there was a lot of visibility, even if you weren't looking for it. So now the bad actors go, no, you know what? We're just going to exfiltrate your data first. Why? Because it's fast, right? We're all connected to the internet, right? So they extract gigs or terabytes of data, and then they start to encrypt. And now you got the double extortion, because even the encryption doesn't finish. They kind of, you pay the fine, you pay the ransom, otherwise we're going to release stuff, right? And if the encryption finishes, well, now you got two bites of the cherry. If you don't want us to release your data and you want the key, so it's like extortion. But they move the threat from days, weeks, months to seconds and minutes, right? And now you lay on top of that the more generative AI that they're using. So things that used to be done by people, and they were done by a really sophisticated AI, from attack analysis to phishing creation to generation of new threats and malware, right? So everything in AI, you can say in an AI, and hey, create me a new threat that nobody has ever seen before. Yeah. Guess what? Boom, here it is. Yeah. Right? I think that's what you do. Copy and paste, you hit it again, and it creates a new one. This is where our current posture of detect and resolve is already crumbling, as I would call it.
That's just a little of fun.
Yeah, well, as you say, the challenge of all the information we get and all the data, it's not a big, we're drowning in data, it's turning into actionable intelligence. And as you said, using the tech so people can then make quicker and better decisions and use their valuable time. So if we just kind of finishing up, and we can really appreciate your time, and I always like to kind of finish off with a kind of, what should somebody do next? So if we're talking out to an audience out there, especially a partner wanting to work with small or medium-sized business, in terms of how do they help raise cybersecurity up the priority ladder a little bit within their customer, and help kind of drive a bit of a change in the strategy, what were kind of the one or two kind of most important things an organization needs to do to move that cybersecurity strategy forward, a little bit, and raise it up in terms of its level of strategic importance?
So this is another podcast, mate, right? But a couple of points from my experience is that, scare tactics don't work, right? Coming in and how the world's falling, Yeah, that didn't work for me personally, right? So having an empathy, first thing you got to do is understand your customer. Second thing you got to do is understand their risk posture, right? Yeah, like I say, and that's very, very different. The third is don't just sell them a technology, right? Yeah, if you're trying to come in and say, hey, I've got vendor A, B, C, right? Well, okay, but how does that help me, right? So you gotta talk in their language. So if you're talking to the CEO, don't talk about technology, right? You're talking about the value and the business impact and whatever, right? I think one thing with certainly some of the smaller partners is, if you've got a business kind of model around a particular vendor, right? Think about broadening that out. Why? Because if your model is to sell me X, Y, and Z, and you only have X, Y, and Z, and you don't have any kind of options, then I know, subconsciously, you're probably going to kind of tailor things to sell me the thing that you have. Not necessarily the thing that's best for me. So, the best partners I work with over the years, obviously, initially it starts as a business kind of transaction, right? But over the years, it was the partners who kind of did a bit of give and take, right? So, I didn't feel that they were just turning up for the next renewal or the next paycheck, right? I felt that they understood me and they would listen, and have the ability to kind of say, you know what, we're probably not quite right for that particular solution. That builds a lot of trust in me because you've been honest, right? And obviously, with somebody like myself, I'm kind of seeing through things, but the small to medium businesses. They're heavily reliant, right? But if you want to build a trust, these are kind of some of the things that you need to do. And know when to lean in and kind of be a bit more forceful and know when to kind of lean back, right? Because like I said, the core, all businesses kind of realize that cyber is a core competency, like locking the door and having an alarm, right? Like it's something you need. But they don't want to spend too much time on it if they don't have the skill and the whatever, and that's what they're looking at you for. So again, we could do a whole nother podcast on that one, Neil.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but a really great place to start. And as you say, approaching the relationship in a positive way, and yeah, moving away from the fear tactics and talking the language is absolutely key. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it, Carl. I'm sure maybe we'll have to come back to some of those topics again for in the future series. But for now, thank you very much. Thank you everybody for your time. Thank you for listening. Really, really appreciate it. Obviously, feel free to share, like, any comments. Do get back to us. But for now, Carl, thank you very much.
No, thanks a lot, Neil. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.